hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin? It's been a while. How are you, Kate?
I am very well. I am a little bit tired. I'm a little bit busy. But otherwise, I am well. How is yourself?
Pretty much the same, which I think explains a lot as to why it's been a while since you've been here. Yeah, I've also had a few gaps in the podcast schedule. It's just been, we've both been exceptionally busy.
Yeah.
And it's hard to keep up with everything. Sometimes you just have to let some things go. And we've been busy because we've been traveling a lot. And actually, just before we started, I looked back to think, okay, I'm going to start from IFA, for example, to recap what happened there. And that was only just over a month ago. It feels like it's been a lot longer.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about IFA, which was here in Berlin. We are going to talk about Linux Foundation Energy, which was in Aachen in Germany. Then we're going to talk about, actually, what was the event in Bologna called?
Bologna Gathering.
Then we're going to talk about IT Arena in Lviv, How2Web in Bucharest, and then we're good. All right.
It'll be a whistle stop around the
various
parts of the world. Let's just put it that way.
Now, I don't know about you, Kate, but because I've been so busy, I have not had time to do much of my creative writing, unfortunately. Mm. And, well, I have a perfect sponsor for busy people who want to do some creative writing but don't have time, and that is PseudoWrite. It's an AI-powered tool. I have actually covered it on the YouTube channel before, and now they've signed up as a sponsor. It actually has quite a lot of good names who recommend it. People like Hugh Howie, who wrote the Silo trilogy, which I just finished. Actually, I think it's called Wool, the books, but Silo, the TV series, Apple TV. And a few others. And it's there for helping you brainstorm ideas, plan, get your work together, et cetera, cross-platform in the browser. If that appeals to you, head on over to go.christianchiller.com/pseudo, S-U-D-O, write, W-R-I-T-E. For a discount off of their premium plan, and of course, to throw a few cents our way.
Fabulous.
On the subject of AI and technology, I'm going to kick off with IFA, previously Internationale Funkausstellung, now renamed to Innovation for All, which is actually quite cool.
Snappy.
Because in German, it's Innovation für alle, so it actually works in both languages. It's a big consumer tech fair. I like to go along. Some of it's kind of more personal interest, and some of it is sort of more work-related, but I must admit I generally am only really interested in looking at a very small percentage of it. It's pretty big. You didn't come this year, did you?
No. I didn't. I just didn't have time, basically. It was just my kind of, you know, my weekends I get to spend at home are kind of precious, and I was just, you know, I needed to spend that time at home, basically.
I wasn't there very long either. It's got a lot bigger again. I think like a lot of other events, it's kind of back to pre-2020 attendances. Make of that what you will. I noticed a lot of the Chinese vendors were back who vanished for a couple of years post-pandemic, but they're mostly back. Now, I'm going to very quickly recap some of my highlights, and I have a video covering some of these too. And some of these I will be doing in more detail because I have some review units to dig into.
Nice.
So I will say my overarching themes are headphones, a lot of headphones, a lot of bone conducting headphones, AI, surprise, surprise, and productivity tools. Now, I'm not saying that this is all that was there. There's a lot of other stuff there, but this is just what I focused on, basically. So in the productivity field, there was this really interesting XP Pen tablet screen type things. Anyone who's ever used any of the higher-end Wacoms, I think the Wacom, I can't remember the product line for Wacom, but it's actually like a screen with a graphics tablet built into it. So instead of using, I actually have one under the desk, like an old-school tablet that you just draw on and then it is an input into whatever you're doing on the screen. It's actually an external screen. And the Intos ones are quite expensive and these XP Pen ones are a lot cheaper. I tried them. They're quite interesting. The refresh rate is quite low, I noticed, and you can see that on the video, the old school like scrolling refreshing screen. It's not something you see so much these days. So that shows you
that's true.
The refresh rate is quite low. I don't know if that matters or not. But yeah, they seemed interesting. Some of their smaller ones I may be interested in. They also have, there's this increasing genre of loosely Android. They're not all Android, but these kind of e-ink tablets, color e-ink especially. I have a Books. Books have some new color ones. There's also a Remarkable. TCL has Next Paper, and XP Pen also had one, which I may take a look into because I've been interested in getting one of these. The Remarkable is too expensive. The Books is okay, but with the one I have, they tend to remove support quite quickly, which puts me off a bit. Yeah. So I might have a look at the XP Pen one. Also in productivity sort of space, productivity AI, I guess, we have the Plaud AI, I don't know, note taker thing.
Did you say Plaud with a P?
Yeah, it's
not
confusing.
Not to be confused with Claude, right?
Well, yeah, I think this is intentional and it has definitely helped them. I've been testing it. I took it to the Arkan event with me and I've been testing doing recordings and I'm kind of doing comparisons between its transcription versus Apple Notes versus transcribing audio through Whisper, et cetera, et cetera. And I will have a review of that soon. I'm still a bit unconvinced by these sorts of devices because, to be fair, phones can do a lot of it these days.
True. But
we'll come back to that.
True. The phone is a veritable superpower these days, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one from a company, intriguingly called Hohem, which to me this sounds like ho-hum, but Hohem Global, they had an AI-powered gimbal. And a gimbal is this kind of thing that you use to hold cameras on. And you've probably seen influencers and camera types walking around with them and they kind of move around as you move your arms and it keeps the camera straight. I've been wanting to get one for ages and keep forgetting. And when the woman pitched this to me, I was like, oh, come on, do we really need this? And then she demoed it and it's actually really cool. If you look at the video, you will see that it does things like you make a hand gesture and then it will start tracking you and it will move the gimbal to track you. And it has a tiny camera built in basically. And then if you make another hand gesture, it will stop tracking you. And I, for example, could make a hand gesture to point at you and it would start tracking you instead. So actually it was kind of cool, actually. Then an awful lot of headphones. I'm not going to go into these in massive detail. Earfun, on the surface, looked like a somewhat generic kind of Chinese OEM, but actually the sound I really, really liked. And they have some models coming out in February that I will hope to get my hands on. These sort of strange MagSafe earbuds, which I have a review unit for. I have mixed feelings on it. We'll cover that one later. Biodynamic had some really nice ones that I liked. And these headphones I have on right now are Biodynamic, actually. CoStar, I didn't really like the headphones, but they had this weird 360 thing where you moved your head around and the music would move around. And I really didn't understand the point, but it was kind of interesting.
I'm not convinced by that.
and finally, in the kind of headphone space, but a little different, is Resound. This is a US company because the US changed these rules, I think, last year around over-the-counter hearing aids because now the technology is so accessible in a lot of modern earbuds. They're basically as good as hearing aids. AirPods have them, and Resound is a company that does this. And I was interested all their marketing material at IFA was in German. So I was interested to know, are these available in Germany? Because I don't know, that was the thing that interested me the most. Can I now get over-the-counter hearing aids in Germany? And I wasn't sure. He didn't really give me a straight answer. So, so
awkward.
But I'd be interested to see if they are because, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of getting to that point in my life where I sort of wonder if they may be useful. But I don't really want to go through the whole referral process.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah. So those are my main things. Mm. Unfortunately, actually, let's jump to you because otherwise it's going to be me talking for ages. So tell us about the Bologna gathering.
Yeah, it's an interesting event. It was kind of, I don't know, conference meets, I don't know, change makers, if I can use that dreadful term. It was basically a gathering, obviously, as the name suggests.
All conferences are gathering, but yes.
Of people mostly in the Italian tech ecosystem, along with a lot of VCs, a lot of kind of those kind of people, ecosystem people. And I got reached out to about a while ago, and it was by someone that was one of the organizers of Slush, which is the infamous tech conference in Helsinki every November that everyone knows and loves. And so that kind of piqued my interest a little bit. And then it was a bit like, you know, we're going to do something a little bit different. And I'm like, sure, because, you know, we all know that conferences often are fairly similar. And this one, they kind of intentionally embedded the kind of social elements in smoothly so that it was most people were going to the same thing. So it was kind of like a continuation of the party, so to speak, or the discussions. And the Bologna region, I think it's the Emilia Romagna region. Sorry, I'm not Italian. I can't say it properly. Actually surprised me. And the reason I thought I sort of gathered my interest by the very first event I went to, which was the, you know, the first night side event. And I learned that there's a $300 million AI factory project, which leverages Leonardo, which is a supercomputer located in Bologna. That's a pretty big plus for the space or the region. Then I discovered that the event wasn't just usual startups and VCs. They actually had potential customers attending. So businesses that would actually rent, you know, compute space from something like this, which I thought was a really, you know, a really clever approach. And I really liked that. Okay. But you know what? I think there were two themes that really pulled out from me from the event. I mean, there was lots of cool stuff happening. The region is well known, particularly for health tech, you know, some sort of innovation areas. And there was two sort of things coming up for me. One was this notion that people really wanted to tell me about all this great stuff happening, you know, and be the cheerleaders. And, you know, certainly evidence of that. I've written an article about it. Mm. But in the next breath, they would be talking about all the things that were wrong with the Italian ecosystem. And a lot of it centered around conservatism and around caution, particularly when it came to investing and a startup mindset. Particularly, a lot of this was cultural. It was things like, you know, one person told me, you know, their brother founded a cafe and their parents just gave them all the money straight away without a question. And when they wanted to do a startup, there was none of that, you know. So a lot of these kinds of feelings. And it was also a feeling that locally people with money would invest in real estate over innovation or R&D or anything like that. So this kind of frustration. And then you had people talking about, well, you know, we can talk a bit about funding. For example, there is a VC arm, which includes government funding, but they've only funded, you know, I think a certain number of investments. I think it was around 700 from memory. So then you had, you know, people saying, you know, where's the innovation? We've got the innovation. Where's the money? Where's the infrastructure? Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, you had people saying, well, you know, inherently as a sector, we're kind of our own worst enemy. We've done so well in the fashion, the tourism, the food and wine that this, you know, La Dolce Vita image has kind of harmed us. So we've kind of, you know, we've made it sound too great and the life, you know, the sort of lifestyle factors, which I thought was a really interesting approach. And, you know, so it was really a lot of people that were all sort of the champions of the sector saying, look, you know, we can't rely on people. We just need to do this ourselves. We just need to get on with it. And people were doing this. This was one of those conferences where it was people from the local ecosystem running it. It wasn't like a bunch of professionals being hired or something and making lots of money. It was people taking this as a, you know, a step away from their side jobs, from their full-time jobs. So that's a lot of commitment. And I think, you know, that's something I really respect because, as you know, personally, running events is not easy. And I know also. So I will leave a link for the article. I'd encourage people to take a look. I think it sort of shows there's more to the region than it may first appear.
Okay. So what do you think is how is Bologna different from Italy in general? What's it doing differently?
I think the main thing is it's smaller. It's a smaller region, I guess, in terms of startups. You know, Milan is sort of the main startup hub for Italy. So it's really just about that regional element. And I think for a lot of people, that's quite important because, you know, people want it. And this is a trend I'm seeing more in, particularly in Southern Europe, people wanting to give back and to, I guess, reinvigorate where they grew up, you know?
Okay.
Which I think is kind of great.
Okay. Cool. I will quickly recap the Arkin event and then we'll take a short break.
Let's do it.
So this was LF Linux Foundation Energy. I've actually been intending to get to it for a while. It was just it's kind of one of those events that I had to be able to justify the cost.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, it was in expensive cities.
Always,
and
right?
Aachen is a lot closer and a lot cheaper. So I finally got along. And it was actually very interesting because I have finished my part on a book on sustainable computing. I'm waiting for the co-author to finish theirs. So I've been thinking about the topic quite a lot, but from a very specific perspective, mostly around kind of the data center and what runs in the data center. Whereas a lot of the LF Energy sort of foundation, sub-foundation, not sure what to really call it, is actually looking at the supply side, the power that gets to those data centers and everything else, of course. So it's a sort of different market than I'm used to, but actually kind of interesting and also in some respects more inspiring because no matter what happens with data center consumption, et cetera, you know, that power has to come from somewhere. And if it comes from the best places possible, then all the better. And a lot of these were European, which is a little different, of course. I think they must run the same event in the US. I'm not sure. There was a few people from China there as well, but mostly European. Actually, a lot of people from the Dutch energy companies, which is smaller, so it's sort of easier for them to do things, of course. But so this is about open source in the supply chain. So this is things like demand planning, demand mapping, billing, dynamic billing, also microgrids. This is used a lot in the developing world.
Definitely.
And just a lot of the open standards, open software and open hardware that runs a lot of these.
That's true.
I have a couple of interviews I will be putting out on the podcast in the near future. But also it was just interesting because it's a very different group of people. I'm mostly used to hanging out with either startup people or kind of software developers and people in the hardware, or I don't know if you'd call it hardware, but infrastructure. Like actual infrastructure space. Are quite different.
Yep.
I suppose you don't really get that many small players is one.
There's a lot of startups in the space, particularly looking at using AI to leverage some of this data for things like, you know, energy optimization and sort of timing for peak periods, so to secure the grid, a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're typically people that have come from a background in energy. So they've got that, I guess that kind of enterprise background, which I think, you know, lends itself very well.
Yeah, but I actually found it really interesting. I think I still need to recap a lot of my thoughts from it. I mean, it was a month ago, but we've been busy. But I found it really, actually, I kind of went with no real expectations and I left actually having found it quite enjoyable and quite interesting and just different, something different. And to see open source and something from the Linux Foundation, which I know in a very particular capacity, doing something else. Was I suppose it would be very similar in the sort of LF automotive. I don't know how to say that word for some reason.
Or manufacturing.
Their sort of sub-foundation as well is different. I don't know. I guess the sort of less cookie cutter startups and projects and more people actually kind of doing something with more impact maybe. I don't know if that sounds a bit unfair, but
no,
it was,
I think it's apt. I mean, when you consider that, you know, I was talking to someone the other day and they were talking about, in Italy, they were saying one of the problems is that Italy doesn't produce its own energy, you know? And someone else was telling me recently, a startup interviewed, that in Estonia, for example, the power outages are so common. Sometimes it's twice a week, you know? And
in Estonia?
Yeah. And you can't imagine a lot of countries where people would put up with that.
I don't know. You know. Yeah. I mean, I think some of the French power people, because the French export a lot of power because they're predominantly nuclear. So they export a lot.
Yeah.
There's a few of them there as well. But yeah, I found it really interesting. I kind of need to put together my thoughts and stuff like that. But it was just something different, open source, but different, which I liked. So, okay.
All right, everybody. Let's take a quick break with an ad from one of our wonderful sponsors.
This is going to be me. So, Kate, do you have a novel in you?
I think everyone's got a novel in them, right?
What's yours?
I don't know. Some type of horror. I think it would be a horror book, like a non-fiction, fiction based on non-fiction horror with the aim of something that could potentially become something visual like a film or TV or something, I reckon. Yeah.
Well, have I got something for you? Because this is a tool that is very good at novels. It's very good at nonfiction. It's very good at scripts as well.
Nice.
I've used it to work on all my long form writing. It's not Microsoft Word, heaven forbid. It's not even Google Docs. Mm. It is Scrivener, the wonderful Scrivener. Ah. They actually just released a new version. It's one of these amazing applications that doesn't really cost that much. Doesn't update that much, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It doesn't really need to.
So it's self-stable, so to speak.
Yeah, like they just released a new update, probably to support the new Apple operating systems. And I can't even remember when I paid for it. Like, I haven't paid for it in years, so it's very good value. So if you would like a little bit of a discount on that very good value, head on over to go.christianchiller.com/Scrivener, S-C-R-I-V-E-N-E-R. The links will be in the show notes. And yeah, get a trial. And if you upgrade, which I highly recommend you do, especially as we are approaching November, which is traditionally a novel writing month. Actually, more on that in the future. I've noticed a couple of writers' communities filling the gap let's not go into too much detail, but filling the gap of the old National Novel Writing Month. Scrivener usually has discounts then as well, but don't use those ones. Use ours. Use ours.
Very nice.
Do you now want to lead into, so we went to IT Arena, blah, 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 maybe.
Okay, so I mean, one of our sort of bigger trips in terms of distance and impact, I guess, was a trip to Lviv for IT Arena, which is a startup conference, which, you know, has been running for, I think, about 6 or 7 years. It has the usual kind of tracks for startup that you would expect, different types of, you know, innovation and investment and things like deep tech and so forth, but it also has an arm of defense tech, which for obvious reasons has become a necessary over the last 3 years. But it wasn't your first time there. I mean, it was my second time during the invasion. But for you, Chris, I think you're a bit of a, I don't know,
sixth. It's your third time total, I think.
I think it was third or fourth. I can't remember.
Yeah, they moved back to the arena.
Which is what it sounds like, a football arena.
Yeah, I was a little bit nervous about that, I would admit, but it was fine.
Yeah.
Lviv actually had some fairly nasty attacks the week after.
Yeah, the weekend after, which was it's quite jolting, if I can just use that word for the moment. Yeah. It's not the right word, I realize, just because, you know, the week before, sort of the same time of the attacks, around the same time, we had been awoken by an air raid siren twice, which, you know, requires you, of course, to be vigilant and to, you know, wait up until it's turned off, which also alerts you. And that happened, you know, the night of the attack, the following weekend, it happened 4 times, which means you've effectively got 8 sirens over, I think it was 3 or 4 hours. Yeah. And just, it made me really think about, you know, firstly, how lucky we are in other parts of Europe that we're not dealing with this as a daily occurrence. And just the impact that this would have on you, you know, physically and mentally when you're trying to get on with your life. You know, you've still got to go to work. You've still got to go to school. You've got, you know, duties and, you know, whether it's children or pets or what have you, or, you know, and just having that sort of impact on not only your sleep, but your psyche would be just, you know, it's a humbling experience to think about, you know, frankly.
Yeah. And we definitely got, we don't want to dwell too much on this, but we definitely got a little bit of an impression from a few people, mostly outside of the event. Yeah. That maybe some of the population is starting to tire. I mean, not that anyone ever wants a war, but, you know, there was always this sort of attitude of being motivated and behind the effort. And that does feel like it's tiring a little, which is a problem. But yeah, inside the event itself, there's a lot of positivity still.
Yeah.
It's an interesting event as well, because whilst you have a lot of the defense tech and the cybersecurity tech and this kind of this tech that has very much grown up in the past few years, you still also get a lot of the very just sort of generic stuff. And it's a little bit of a stark contrast sometimes.
Yeah, totally. It's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you've got someone with a tank or sort of, you know, what have you. And then you've got someone with a SaaS product.
Yeah. But it's sometimes a little hard to get particularly excited about.
Yeah. I mean, I did a number of interviews, which I'm rolling out. I've currently just finished writing up one, which hopefully will go out this week, with Dwarf Engineering, which was the winner of the startup competition under the defense category. Yep. But I think a couple of things I would say about Ukraine at the moment is, it's, in terms of tech, it's in a pretty good place. I mean, we've just seen 11 Labs do a deal with the Ukrainian government. to do voice AI and sort of digital twin type stuff.
And a friend of ours actually was due to interview their AI but it didn't quite happen. But anyway.
So it's, but I mean, and we've also seen like last month, Ukraine officially launched its first state level AI infrastructure, so called the AI Factory. Mm-hmm. And that includes basically they're building a national LLM, which is super important. We also had Monobank yesterday, which is a Ukrainian neobank. I think neobank, challenger bank, whatever, become a unicorn. So it's kind of, there is still plenty of things happening. And I think that the two things I would say that, you know, at the start of the invasion, there was a lot of people told me in Ukraine that they were due money and the investors just walked away straight away.
They just
fucked off basically. I'm talking about investors outside of Ukraine, obviously. So that's pretty devastating.
Yeah.
And now you've got sort of, I think the challenge you've got is, you know, it's a region always known for its excellent engineering and software development and so forth. I would not want companies not building defense tech to feel left behind in the hype because, I mean, obviously defense tech is extremely necessary for very obvious reasons, you know, but there's also sort of the matter of there is still all this talent doing lots of good things. It is a young country. Most of the leaders are young. Are younger than me, you know.
That is changing, though, unfortunately, in quote marks, thanks to the invasion. A lot of the younger people are otherwise engaged, shall we say. I heard this, that the population is rapidly aging because of this, which is kind of sad.
Yeah. I think, you know, then, of course, National Service is what, 25?
I was a little confused by that. I wasn't 100% sure because it sounded older than I thought. Then I heard mixed values. I'm not 100% sure.
So, there's kind of this sort of push-pull of where you position yourself, both in terms of a company, but also in terms of where you live for obvious reasons. So people are doing it tough, but then, you know, people are also just getting on with it. It takes, obviously, a very large amount of resilience to do these things and to do these hard things and, you know that it's, you know, I think it's always been a region that's done cool stuff. And I think it's... Yeah. Important not to forget that because, cool stuff happening.
Yeah. And I was specifically working on a piece for IEEE Spectrum on kind of being an engineer in defense tech. It'll take me a little while to get that together. Yeah. It's quite an interesting conversations to have because a lot of people involved in it are very secretive.
For obvious reasons.
It was kind of interesting to me as to like why some were and some weren't and what decision that those people made. And maybe I was trying to probe for some answers to certain questions.
I can tell you one of the reasons
sort of hard
for
to
that.
Get answers to, but yeah.
This is my knowledge, is because some of the startup founders are active service members.
Therefore, they
don't necessarily want to have their face shown or their, you know, their name out there. They may have a very, very basic website. Most of them do. Some of them have no LinkedIn presence. These are safety security things because, tracking, there's an element of risk when you're testing products because you can use them to track and things like that. So, you know.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think a lot of the people who were doing that were younger. So, yeah.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
And I know a couple of people I interviewed did speak about the issue of security in building products in Ukraine, particularly defense tech, in terms of cybersecurity. I'm sure people get my drift where the cyber attacks can come from. So, exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to add there?
I would say there's we've got more stories to come. I'd put it that way.
Yeah, and likewise. It's going to take a little while
The nature of tech journalism is that we are in conference season, which means we are going to
And this was only a week
back
ago.
To back. Pretty much back-to-back events, which means it's...
Well, on the subject of back-to-back.
Yeah,
next, we went to Bucharest.
We did.
For How to Web. Yes. I found a slightly confusing name.
It was.
I think the tagline is something like where builders meet something.
It was basically a dev conference. I'm going to rephrase that. I am not speaking the truth. It was basically a startup conference. I mean, and I thought it was, I thought the agenda was pretty good. I think a number of people I spoke to at the event has said to me, you know, we don't usually get Western media covering us. And
oh, really? Okay.
My view to that is always for companies like ours, Tiki, we cover all of Europe and we do as much outreach as we can, but it's obviously it's purely time limited, resource limited as, you know, small team with other things to do. And you know, we do get less press pitches from these regions. That's the fact.
Yeah.
You know, the more stories they give us, the more we can tell them. It's really that simple.
I think the interesting thing I found with it was Romania doesn't seem to know quite where it is yet. Mm. You know, certain parts of Europe have certain benefits they offer or certain things they are particularly good at. And a lot of the, I also heard this from some people from the Czech startup representatives as well, saying that they don't really know what their selling point is yet. It has one, not even a unicorn. What do people describe it? Decticorn or something, which is UiPath.
Unicorn? What do you mean? It's beyond
They've done very well. They've done very well. Yeah. And there's a couple of other companies I saw that I knew that I didn't realize were Romanian. Mm. I mean, it's now in Schengen. Bulgaria is getting the euro next year. So I don't know if Romania
I know when I was in Moldova, so I also met quite a lot of Romanians.
Yes. It's ethnically, okay, I don't even want to finish that sentence just in case I get into trouble. But they have some shared history.
There is a regional look perspective, I guess.
Yeah.
Put it that way. It is interesting. And, you know, it's kind of, I think what often interests me about countries where they may have been a little slow to innovate for, you know, for various reasons is can they leapfrog some of those steps that, you know, other countries took a long time to do. You know, I think, and that's something I've always found with Moldova. Yeah. Moldova has been able to do that through, even though it's, you know, a work in progress, obviously, with that kind of digital first approach to a lot of their infrastructure and their startup sort of ecosystem.
Well, interestingly, because there's a history of this, last time I was there, something I learned, I assume it's still the case. I can't think it have changed, but Romanians, I'm not sure when, like it's another one of these European countries that came out of a dictatorship, and I'm not 100% sure when that finished. They built their own internet infrastructure, mostly above ground, and they did it so well that basically the national body just bolted off the people, which is interesting. So there is a history of like DIY that can become more. Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. And again, it's always interesting. The same thing happened in Ukraine. You start talking to taxi drivers, and taxi drivers are a font of information a little bit more pragmatic, maybe, people in these sorts of events, because they sort of get to talk to lots of different people and get to see things. So, I think it's one of these countries that has a lot of drive to do things, but the political situation can sometimes get in the way and makes it a little unstable for investors, for overarching bodies, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I don't know. It was an interesting event. And they tried to do it like a kind of indoor-outdoor thing, which was great on the first day. And then the weather massively changed on the second day.
I really felt for them because warning, a cat has entered the podcast conversation. We may step on something and make something happen. I mean, last year it was hot and sunny apparently, so you can't win, you know, when it comes to weather.
Well, it was hot and sunny the first day.
But I mean, awesome. I think I think they did some good stuff, and it was it was a good event. And one of the things I did find out about, which I interviewed and will write up when I have time, you know, the magical time, Johnny. Johnny the cat is helping out. I learned about the European Startup Embassy, which is basically it's kind of like a hacker house in Silicon Valley that acts as a bit of a soft landing for CEE startups. So it's a way to kind of, you know, go over there and even from NVCs, by the way, go for a month and try it out or, you know, make connections. And I think that's a great and did really good interviews, really interesting. And I know Entrepreneurs First has sort of stolen the idea a little bit, doing something similar, which they announced, this week. But
it's also funny because you have that whole kind of like European aspect to things sometimes. And I think sometimes we forget where the dynamics lay. Like, for example, I've noticed in Ukraine, but also in Romania, there's a lot of Polish investment.
Yeah, definitely.
And then a lot of Germans invest in Poland. Yeah. And there's like this weird kind of like different regions tend to invest in other regions.
That's true.
So I think like almost half the people we met were from Poland.
Yeah, 100%.
Kind of interesting.
It was.
It's something we actually noted on because we went through Poland between Ukraine and Romania. You actually see how well, economically anyway, Poland seems to have done in the past few years. It was actually quite stark to see the contrast, definitely between Ukraine and Poland. That makes a bit more sense. But even between Romania and Poland, like, there was a massive, massively noticeable difference with the way things looked. And Poland is actually, I think it shows you that they must be doing well because they're putting their money elsewhere. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
We haven't really done much of an investigation of the Polish startups.
Again, it's the same thing. I mean, these people need to do they need to coordinate their marketing more. You know, and I think the reason
You tell them, Kate, you tell them.
Yeah, and look, I think the reason I mentioned this is because, you know, when you're an early stage company, you don't have anyone doing marketing, you know? It's up to the founders who don't have time and, you know, so it's a balancing act. And, you know, now, of course, you can do some of it with AI, but a lot of it is done so badly with AI that we disregard it. It's always this kind of loop, I think. But I don't know. I think people are starting to see it more when they talk to investors that it is part of the, you know, the critical toolkit. I don't know. Tools, so to speak, to have marketing in as part of your arsenal as much as customer acquisition and everything else. Yeah.
Well, marketing and customer acquisition are connected.
And some of that is talking to the press, but certainly not all of it, obviously.
Yeah. All right then. So on that, next for me is a little lighter. I will be back at Web Summit sort of 10th-ish of November. And just before that, I would actually be helping out at the Superbase Hackathon.
Wow. Doesn't stop, does it?
Just before Web Summit. And that's basically it for me. I'm doing some other travel, but not really work related.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm off to Armenia, to Yerevan tonight, and then I will be going to Shanghai for a automotive trip, which I will no doubt tell you about.
You're not stopping.
The next trip, we'll see how that goes. It's been a little. The latter has been probably the most unorganized example of a press trip I've ever seen.
Which, you know, going to China is easy. You know?
So it may end up me sitting in a hotel in China the whole time. Who knows?
Well, that doesn't sound particularly appealing. But yeah,
they've given me an itinerary, but it was more just, you know, I had to ask three times. So we will see. Right. But it's been great to catch up and great to catch up with all the listeners. Hopefully there is somebody listening. And we will no doubt be sharing more news in the near future.
Yeah.
So where can people find you, Chris? People have listened to you on the show.
I'm at
they're like,
Chris. Yeah, ChrisDiChiller.com. I have this IFA video. I have a blog I just put out the past couple of days on combining macOS focus mode and Raycast. I also have a recent post for IEEE Spectrum on esoteric programming languages. The interview of that will also be in the podcast feed probably next week, actually. And in addition to that, I'll have my various IFA reviews, and I have a very big gear post and video coming out.
Does that include
soon-ish.
The new furniture in the office?
It does include various bits of new furniture. For some strange reason, people really want to keep sending me furniture.
Yeah, I got an invite too, actually, to review some office furniture, but unfortunately it's not really in my remit. There you go.
Sometimes I just want – I don't know. This is where you get to that difference between like journalist and quote unquote
influencer.
in that a journalist, sometimes you're not supposed to take things and but as an influencer in big air quotes, you kind of can't, I don't know, who knows? Whatever.
Who knows these days? It's all changing. Yeah. Okay. Well, and me, I am on LinkedIn, obviously under my name, and it is Kate with a C. Someone asked me the other day how to pronounce my name. It's like Kate with a K, but it's a C. Yeah. Like the other Australian, Kate Blanchett. But not. Very clearly not. And I am also on.
Thank you to the. Sorry, yes.
I'm also on the blue sky and the threads, if you are that way inclined.
On the blue sky.
Arguably far less active, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm findable, basically. Put it that way.
Yep. If you are interested in writing in any way, shape, or form, take a look at the two sponsors for this episode. That is SudoWrite,
your Rogers.
AI-powered creative writing workflows, and Scrivener for just putting it all together, basically, and packaging and managing and all sorts of things. put the links in the show notes. And yeah.
Fabulous.
It's been a long time, Kate. Nice to catch
up. Very nice to catch up.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.